Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is peace at hand? Russia-Ukraine negotiations to end the conflict appear to be a real possibility. Compromise seems to be prevailing. Will this impact the West's offensive against Russia? Cross-talking the conflict in Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Wyatt Reed, in Washington. He's a journalist with Sputnik News. In Charlottesville, we have David Swanson. He is the executive director of worldbeyondwar.org. And in Pittsburgh, we have Dan Kovalik. He is a professor of law and author of The Plot to Scapegoat Russia. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Wyatt, let me go to you. I mean, I originally titled this program Time to De-escalate in light of the truly disastrous trip that Biden had to Europe last week. And then we had today reports coming out of the negotiations in Turkey that the Russians and the Ukrainians seem to be hammering out something here. It has already been reported that Russia is moving some of its forces away from Kyiv and other large cities. That's in play. This is what the wire services are saying. This is what I checked the TASS news service. This is what they're saying. It seems to be having some traction here. I find very interesting why it is that, you know, we have all of this bombastic rhetoric coming out of NATO, out of Washington, out of London, and then we have this going on in Turkey. Is everybody on the same page here? Because this doesn't seem like it to me. Wyatt in Washington, go ahead.
Peter, I think you're exactly right. This is a case where people are simply not on the same page. The Zelensky regime obviously has a serious amount of willingness to negotiate here, something that we just don't really see much of in Washington, within NATO, within those more hardline Ukrainian militias that are in the east of the country. We see less of a willingness to negotiate, but you know, Zelensky himself, I think, is proposing some very, very reasonable sort of conditions here. When we talk about who actually is control of this, I think, you know, that is a very important question. We know Ryan Grimm asked Jen Psaki, more or less point blank, whether or not the United States would sort of even support these negotiations. Obviously, Jen Psaki isn't going to say no, but she didn't really outline a very constructive role for the United States in this negotiation process. Obviously, it's very early on, very hard to tell, but I would hope for the sake of Ukrainians, for the sake of Russians, that this is more in the hands of Zelensky.
David, weigh in on that. It's really early. I mean, speaking right now, this information that I just conveyed is hours old here. But there seems to be a glimmer of hope to finally have this conflict come to an end. And it seems to be that the security of the Ukrainians and the Russians are being met. I mean, it's really unfortunate that nobody listened to about security guarantees back in December. But here we are, David.
Yeah, well, here we are because both sides escalated and Russia invaded and Russia bombed and killed and murdered. And, you know, countless hosts on Russian TV and radio outlets that pretended to me for years and years that they opposed war and they opposed killing and they opposed blowing up men, women and children didn't mean it. They meant only that they opposed you, just like all the people in the U.S. who suddenly oppose Russian war making but cheer when it's U.S. war making. I mean, this is what's so disgusting about this is how many people have cheered for one side or the other in this war. And there's going to be tough negotiations ahead. Ukraine is probably going to have to give up territories, and Russia is going to have to be held accountable and pay reparations, not be held accountable by hypocrites in Washington, but be held accountable by international bodies that largely don't exist and need to be built up despite the opposition of these horrible warmongering governments in both Russia and Washington.
David, if you want to call out warmongers, can you call out Kyiv too? Let me go to Dan, because there was an 8-year war against the Donbass where 14,000 people were murdered, bombed, shelled, and a form of ethnic cleansing. So that's a war the West doesn't want to talk about, okay? And it is the origins of this conflict right now. Dan in Pittsburgh, please weigh in.
Yeah, well, that is true. The war didn't begin a month ago. It began 8 years ago. And as you say, 14,000 people have died. 80%, the figure I saw is 80% are indeed Ukrainians living in the Donbass region. And again, without justifying what Russia did, I mean, I think, you know, what I understand is that Russia saw that Kiev was mounting troops, 60,000 troops on the border of Donbass, possibly poised to engage in a major invasion of that area to take it back from the breakaway republics. And in fact, Zelensky had threatened to do that over the summer. I mean, he was very overt that that's what he was going to do, right? And Russia decided to act. We'll never know whether that invasion by Kiev would have happened, but we do know that there were constant attacks being made against the Donbass and that there were troops, including ultra-right wing elements located in the Donbass that were torturing and killing ethnic Russians in that area. And again, as you say, the Western press has been utterly absent in covering this. And it really doesn't give, therefore, a true picture of the situation.
Well, yeah, I mean, go ahead, David, jump in. Go ahead.
Russia decided to act as if your choices are war or nothing. I mean, imagine if I went into a domestic court and said, yes, Your Honor, I burned all those children, but I know a guy who's burned 100 times more. You know, an honest judge would say, great, we're going to convict you, and we'd like to know about that other guy. There isn't an honest judge on the international
scale. I beg to disagree with you on that, David. Let me go to Wyatt here. The Russians made it very clear. We have recent history, December 17th, two draft treaties were sent, one to NATO and one to Washington, saying we cannot tolerate the status quo. Now, here are our demands. Will you negotiate in good faith? Oh, they did not negotiate in good faith. Hang on, let's get everybody in there. Let's get everyone in here. Let David respond. Wyatt first.
Well, we have something else called the Minsk agreements, right? We have these agreements. We didn't jump directly from, you know, from these attacks straight into war, straight into, you know, Ukraine versus Russian military. We had 8 years of attempts to reconcile these forces, to come to a peaceful agreement. And we had 8 years of, or several years of the Ukrainian government failing at every corner, at every turn, to uphold its end of the Minsk agreements, failing to abide by these documents. So at what point, I guess my question would be, at what point, how many people is enough? How many Russian-speaking Ukrainians have to die before they're allowed to fight back?
David, you want to weigh in? Go ahead.
I do, yes. Russia is not a model citizen in the world, has not joined or supported the International Criminal Court or the International Court
of Justice. Has the United States? Has the United States?
Of course not, for God's sake. Of course not. Hang on. Has not supported the rule of law, was in a position of mocking this program and this network, mocking the predictions of invasion. World opinion was moving towards Russia's side. Russia was helping refugees from the Ukrainian violence. Russia could have appealed to the world for people to come and nonviolently support the Ukrainians in the Donbass. I would have come. All those people being arrested for holding up a piece of paper in Moscow would have come. You would have had the world on Russia's side. Instead, this pretense that bombing and mass murder was the only option.
Okay, but David, I get your point, but let me go to Dan here. You know, we've heard ever since the end of the Cold War, NATO is a defensive alliance. Then they dismantle the former Yugoslavia. NATO is a defensive alliance. It destroys Libya. Do you think Russia, considering what happened in June 1941, is going to believe the words of an alliance that just says, we're a defensive alliance? Go ahead, Dave. Dan.
Well, of course not. And of course, they can't believe NATO. Of course, Russia was promised. Remember that Gorbachev was told by James Baker, Secretary of State James Baker, that if he allowed Germany to reunite, that NATO would not move an inch east of Germany. Of course, no sooner was that said than the U.S. began to, and NATO began to encroach all the way up to the borders of Russia, which again, the U.S. would never have tolerated, right? If there was a Warsaw-type pact And they had troops in Mexico, the U.S. never would have tolerated that. In fact, the last time they tried something like that in Cuba in 1962, we almost went to war over it. So, no, of course, the U.S. is a completely unreliable negotiator on any of these things. And by the way, I think that's why Zelensky is trying to find a way out of this, because he found the U.S. was not truthful with him. He thought NATO and the U.S. would back him up on this. And of course, they've done nothing. So, yes, I think the international system has broken down. The U.S. in particular has intentionally destroyed it bit by bit. The attack on Serbia was a big part of doing that. And so what is there to appeal to? And I think we have to start asking, what is there to appeal to internationally for these sorts of things? And we need to start creating something that's real to do that, if we believe
Dan,
the rule of law.
But Dan, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but this was offered in December of last year to reassess the security architecture of Europe. And it came on deaf ears. Wyatt, 30 seconds. Wyatt, 30 seconds before we go to the break. Wyatt, go ahead. 30 seconds.
I blame NATO
for this. What was happening the month before or the month after? Well, we got this article in Yahoo that showed, I'm going to draw a quote here. The United States is training an insurgency, said a former CIA official, to kill Russians. Right. So we have this program, and that's something that the CIA has been doing since the end of World War II, by the way. So that is the sort of conditions that you have in Ukraine. That is what Russian-speaking people are up against, and that is the backdrop for all of this.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the conflict in Ukraine. Stay with RT.
Talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence as own existence.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the conflict in Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to David in Charlottesville. Are there any lessons to learn from this? Because this is a war that never should have happened in the first place. There were so many opportunities to avert it. Now it has happened. As we speak right now, there looks like to be some kind of possibility to end hostilities. But where do we go from here? Because the isolation of Russia in every sense of the word is going to continue. This is a part of a mania that is now in Western Europe and certainly in the United States. The conflict may end in Ukraine, but the tensions won't. Go ahead, David.
Well, we can list endless thousands of mistakes and horribly reckless actions by Russia, by the United States, by NATO, by Ukraine, and please and displease four different audiences in the process. Virtually nothing was done right. That's how you get into a war. You know, the norm is peace. It takes
I agree with you on that. Go ahead.
Glad to hear it. And we can stop, you know, excusing what Russia does because the United States does worse. I mean, this is like the mafia does it, so it's okay, Mom. You know,
well,
this is
you know, not David, if something is existential, you have to act. And if the international system doesn't work for you, you have to act out of self-defense, okay? That is an argument. You may not like it, but it is an argument. I interrupted you. Please continue.
the mafia does it, mom, so it's okay is also an argument. It's not a good one. It's not a legal one, and it's not a moral one. And blowing people up in Ukraine and calling it defensive is no better than blowing people up in Yemen and calling it defensive.
David, why didn't NATO want to defend the people of the Donbass if they're so, you know, noble in wanting peace and wanting defense? Okay, Wyatt, I can't get away from that. That conflict was completely ignored. You tell people about it and say, I never heard about it before. That was intentional, Wyatt.
Of course, absolutely. It was intentional. But NATO is a criminal cartel. Nobody said it was noble.
Go ahead, Wyatt.
Well, so then to me, the natural question is, if you have this criminal cartel, it's coming up, it's constantly advancing right on your borders, you say, stop it. You say, stop it, criminal cartel. Stop advancing on my borders. Stop drawing all these different countries into your sphere of influence away from our sphere of influence. Now, according to the U.S. establishment, Russia isn't even allowed to have a sphere of influence. Even though we go back to, 2014, you can see even President Obama telling the Atlantic, quote, the fact is that Ukraine, which is a non-NATO country, is going to be vulnerable to military domination by Russia no matter what we do. So you have this recognition from some levels, that didn't want to send weapons to these Nazis in Ukraine, that then hounded President Trump for years over his failure to send enough weapons to Nazis in Ukraine. These are the kind of, the backdrop, again, that we have in the United States, which, if we had a really sort of educated anti-war populace, they were all like David, I think these kinds of attitudes about, all war is bad, all war should be opposed unconditionally, no matter what. I think that would, a lot more people would be more receptive to that kind of argument. But the fact of the matter is, as Peter noted, this was an existential crisis. This is how Putin saw it. This is how Russia saw it. This is how they made it extremely clear for years and years and years that Ukraine was the red line, right? That this failure to abide by the peace process for 8 years, again, not overnight, not 8 months, not 8 days, 8 years, that killed 14,000 people, the vast majority Russian speaking on that side of the DPR, the LPR, that is something that you just can't ignore. You can't look the other way. You can't say, hey, international community, is somebody going to do something about it? Because they simply didn't. They simply did not. They didn't care. And this is why you have people that do, regardless of how people in the West see it, they do view the Russian army as liberators in some sense, in a way that the United States Army was never seen in Iraq, never going to be seen in, places like Syria. When we talk about Ukraine, you have to understand, what does that mean? It means borderlands in Russia, right? This is a region of the world that has these long-term historical connections to Russia.
Interesting what Wyatt brought up about what Obama said to the Atlantic magazine. I said that and I got canceled in every sense of the word on social media because I said exactly what Barack Obama said. OK, but I'm canceled for it. And all of my work on the Internet has been completely erased. OK, because I had an opinion of the 44th president of the United States. I mean, it's really amazing times we live in now. Dan, where do we go from here? Because, when I look at Western media, it's all Ukraine. They put the Ukraine flag on their lapel, but throwing more and more arms into a conflict that they cannot win. I mean, is that empathy for Ukrainians? I mean, I can't figure that out. Go ahead, Dan.
No, of course. I mean, again, from an American point of view, and I'm an American, and I therefore have some say in my government, not much, but we have an ostensible democracy. I need to hold my own government accountable for their actions. And so what is my path forward? What do I think needs to be done? I think we need to encourage the U.S. to ratchet down its anti-Russian rhetoric, which is not just anti-Putin, but literally anti-Russian. It is racist, right?
Isn't that treason to say what you're saying is treasonous according to standards right now in the media? I mean, it's really extraordinary. Your patriotism is questioned.
Yeah, I know. And I know legally it's not treasonous. Of course, we're not even at war with Russia, so it's literally not treasonous. But I understand it's treated as such. But look, I think we need a reset of relations. That should have happened a long time ago. We need to sit down, find mutual security. And again, we got to get the U.S. to stop spending over $700 billion a year on war. We need to really change the priorities of this country to focus on the real problems in this country: infrastructure, hunger, lack of healthcare, and stop trying to dominate the world. It is that will to power which has led to this horrible crisis. And again, as an American, that's what I need to try to fix.
Okay, but David, that is not going to happen. As a matter of fact, I think just the reverse. I think that, you know, obviously we all want the conflict in Ukraine to end as soon as possible. But the ramifications politically, economically, I would say will last a generation. Russia and the West have gone their separate ways. They're not going to meet each other again for a very long time. Your thoughts, David?
Well, we can work to make that not be the case. And of course, if this ends up with nuclear weapons used, there won't be any more generations. I think principally what we need is the government of Ukraine to resist the right-wing tendencies within its own country, to resist NATO, to resist the United States, as well as to resist Russia, and to be neutral and to stay neutral. And we need the rest of the world, the nations outside of the United States and Russia, to take charge of world affairs, to democratize the United Nations, to say no to these imperial, bloodthirsty, warmongering governments, and start stepping out of the shadow of the United States or Russia to be full citizens of the globe. Because we, as you say, we can't be putting our faith in the governments that are leading the earth right off a cliff.
You know, Wyatt, the relationship that Russia has with the Western world is basically been cut, okay? And it continues that way. That it has a momentum already to it. Even though Europeans can lift sanctions, Americans never lift sanctions, okay? So I think, you know, that's a sign of the times. Russian assets are illegally stolen by governments without any due process. This is the West, freedom of speech, property rights, that's all gone. It's all gone now, okay? And why would anyone trust the West doing that, okay? To a G20 country. Go ahead, Wyatt.
Well, absolutely. And this is something we've been seeing for years with Venezuela, with Iran, open piracy on the open seas, stealing shipments of oil. These kinds of tactics are nothing new. It's just that now we're seeing them tried out on, you know, a competitor, a sort of peer power. It's not something that I think people who have an interest in peace should want to see. Obviously, plenty of people in the United States and the West right now do not really have peace on their mind. They have this kind of braying for blood. You know, we were sort of in this war fever right now because the mainstream media simply won't stop beating the drums of war. But obviously, this is going to lead to, like you said, you know, kind of a decoupling. I think we're already sort of there. We see segments of Europe that are simply unable to decouple because to do so would leave them freezing in the cold. But we have already seen that, you know, there is no willingness within the West now even to allow Russians to participate in the international financial system. So they are having to do other transactions in other currencies other than the dollar, other than the euro. This is great for people who want to see the rise of something opposed to the petrodollar, who want to see an alternative sort of multipolar world. But if you are a sort of war hawk, if you are an American exceptionalist, a European exceptionalist, I would think that this would appear as basically the biggest self-inflicted wound the West has given itself in the decades.
Amazingly self-inflicted. Let me go back to David here. The gaffe-driven president of the United States. See, people say it was a gaffe. I think Biden actually says what he really thinks, that he wants regime change in Russia. And, of course, his people have to clean up after him. But he doubled down on it, again, tripled down. And this is what we see on this side of the pond, is that, oh, you did that in Iraq. Okay, you did that in Libya. You want to do it in North Korea. You want to do it in Russia. There's obvious reasons why people react negatively to that. David.
Absolutely right, and defended on the U.S. Media outlets, and I can't get on U.S. media outlets, so there's no need for them to arrest me the way I would be arrested tomorrow if I came to Russia for what I'm able
no,
to
No, you would not. That is a complete exaggeration.
Russian.
David, that is... I know there are people that work at RT that are angry about this, and they're not fired, okay? They have opinions,
they
too. My
so?
Goodness, allow people agency. Only people in the West have agency. agency. No, people here also do.
You hold up a poster on Russian TV, you get interrogated for 14 hours and prosecuted for a crime.
I don't know what that what crime might have been committed. Okay, anyway, I'm sorry. I want to give Dan. Let me give you the last few seconds. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, look, I think for those interested in peace and the rule of law, again, I think we have to get our own house in order. We need to mobilize a real peace movement in the United States, call upon the U.S. to de-escalate with Russia. I think a relationship with Russia is still possible. I've been saying that for years. I still believe that. And I agree, it may be some time before that is possible, but I think we have to work for that, and that's what I'm going to work for.
Yep, well, there are too many people making money off of war and armaments and this neoliberal ideology that is so intolerant. I don't see it happening. I'm a pessimist. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. That's all the time. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Charlottesville, and in Pittsburgh. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk Rules.